Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and this is the closeout of where we're all getting ready to go to the AEC Integration Summit. And a lot of conversations with Nick and his team around all of his podcasts and his platform. And today we're going to be wiring to build, and we're going to be talking about how to put all this stuff together. When I say we are all wired to build on this podcast, we truly are. So we're going to get to know Nick's story, where he actually runs the Wired to Build podcast. And on all the pre-interviews, it was super fun talking about the who and the what and different threads all coming together. It makes me think about my buddy Bill Allen, who just sold out to Autodesk, and all the changes of all that stuff, of having him on the podcast a few times. Think about our show AOC episode 322 of Bridging Architecture and AI. That was released a few years ago that I think is a very timely title of where we're actually sitting today, where Nick on his podcast, Wired to Build, just released a podcast titled Building Beyond the BIM Bubble. And so as Bill Allen taught me on the podcast before all of this, it was around orchestrating a network. And Bill is definitely one of those guys. If you look at all the cool evolutions of Evolve and all the stuff they've done, we're going to carry that into the threads in and out of the AEC Integration Summit. And the main message is this is a big one. And it's really truly of like, how do we figure out the art and science, or art versus science, or art and science, or the art of construction? It's really hard after 350 podcasts that I've done. And it's not the Devin Tilley podcast, it's the Art of Construction. And Nick is truly another one of those guys. And he's been the OG of the AEC Integration Summit that Nathan Wood, my co-host, has been on all these conversations leading in and out of this. And that's really how I really got to know Nick, who is a OG, but also right here in Denver. So we're all be able to come in and out of having meetings in person and a lot of getting to know each other and figuring out how do we take things that can be controversial and turn them into great conversations, or as Nathan says, sharing pain into shared gains. And talking through that, it's not a straight workflow. It never has and it never will be that we keep trying to find the square peg in the round hole. So we have to build systems and things must be flexible. And that's what Nick is always talking about of like, okay, make this relatable, break it down, simplify this. And he's got a bunch of milestones that we're going to be able to announce today on this podcast that I'm super excited about. And so those are my perspectives, Nathan, that I'm another kid in the candy store here listening to you OGs bring this to the table. How about you as the co-host on this podcast?
You know, I think the one thing that comes to mind is getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. I think that that's, you know, as much as we get into this, and I know Nick has a very interesting perspective and comes, you know, from the architecture background, but yet we are certainly cut from the same cloth. And I think all of us have a lot of shared vision of where we see the industry going, but come from different perspectives. So yeah, just really excited to dig into Nick's perspective, see how it all fits within kind of this narrative arc of the summit itself and the role you're playing in it, Devin, and just dive in.
Awesome. Well, I'm super excited to have this. Let's go have as much fun as possible, Nathan, get to know Nick's story, what he's all about, and what's going on there with Nick Caravello over at Avocado. What do you say?
Yeehaw.
Nick, what's your favorite beverage?
I've been a real big fan of Olipop lately, one of the healthy sodas, if you will, mostly because you can get cream soda out here in Colorado now. Maybe even from the East Coast, it's a hard find.
There you go. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Favorite place? There's so many. You know, getting to travel across the states with conferences is usually, you know, one of the best things of the job, getting to see places that I'd never thought that I'd really enjoy. Like Detroit, for example, people talk a big game about it. I had a heck of a lot of fun over there. But overseas, Barcelona, for sure. Felt like I could get lost in that city. The planning is just done. Gaudi is an incredible designer, and there's just so much to take in while you're out there.
Awesome. Can you give us one story from Barcelona?
Oh, yeah. This is a weird one. I was walking around Les Ramblas, which is the big park in Barcelona. And I was a kid at the time. So it was through a Spanish exchange program. and it was neat. You see all the street vendors set up side by side. And oddly enough, this one guy selling belts posted up right next to another guy selling belts. And the next thing you knew, they were using belts for a lot more than selling. they were hitting each other, all sorts of different things. I could not believe my eyes, but what a great street show that turned out to be.
I love it. It's the threads and the whips all coming together. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Tell us, what do you like to do outside the construction arena that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah, I have the dirty habit of being really interested in this stuff. So I tend to be tinkering, whether it is creating our own podcast, trying to figure out what it is for the future of digital communication, to building my own GPTs now, to try and figure out how the heck to do all the things that I want to do. There's something cool, and I know we're going to nerd out about it, but there's the democratization aspect of AI that's letting me write music, create podcasts, create more content, and I think that accessibility is really fun, and we'll dig into it, I'm sure, but that's what I've been playing around with lately today.
Yeah, well, what an honor to have you. Nick Caravella, what is your story that led you being an architect, technologist, and strategist helping others with the creative technology solutions they need to manage their program at Avocado?
Yeah, my love for architecture was an interesting one. I started out in the restaurant industry like many folks do, and I had a deep passion for the experience of place and space. And so I said, ha, maybe I'll get into design and own my own restaurant one day. Still very much want to do that. Crazy enough to try to enter the restaurant industry from the construction industry, probably two industries that require a little bit of insanity to be a part of. But in doing that, then I learned about design and place and experience and all of those really cool things. I worked on a variety of different verticals, from life sciences to your libraries. Now I get to work with data centers with Avocado, and I think that that's pretty fun. And ultimately, it just became this study of how people experience place and space and how we can help the everyday life get a little bit better. And that's something that just has been a unique, fun fit for me.
That's awesome. And you know, jumping into Avocado a little bit, because I have certainly have my perspective and my experience. I know we bring up Avocado all the time as we're talking about integration platform as a service concepts and kind of how we solve this big, you know, messy bucket in the middle. And there's products and there's service and all these sort of things. So like when someone asks, you know, what exactly do you do here in this world of Avocado? If I'm a general contractor, you know, like what do you tell me that Avocado does for me?
For sure. And I'll go back to a little of my story too. Like my journey into Avocado really started at the architecture office in terms of being the young guy who must be good with technology. What that basically meant is no one else had the time to figure something out. And so being the intern or whatever, I had to be the guy who did. And so I ended up doing BIM deployments, building template libraries, figuring out how to do what we do today while leveraging the technology that's available to us. I actually ended up leaving architecture for a little while to join a tech startup because I felt there was so much room to do exactly that. My journey at the startup, though, taught me that there's a lot of really good tools out there and we're just not maximizing them. And that's what actually brought me to Avocado. Nathan introduced me to Avi. We had a big geek sesh about helping folks better leverage technology. And that's what Avocado did. It got their start. We're nearing our 10-year anniversary. By the time you're listening to this, we'll be 10 years old now. And what we started as is an e-builder consultancy. Owners are leveraging large PMIS systems, collecting a lot of data from general contractors, architects, and so on. And then what you'd find from, if you've ever experienced climbing through a plan room basement, is that this information is ultimately not super organized, and being able to make asset and data-driven decisions becomes incredibly challenging. And so what Avocado does, I'd like to think, you know, there's ACO. I'd love to put a T at the end of it and make it ACOT, a technology team, who really is helping be strategic and be a data partner between all of these partners in construction, to help create good ways of improving communications. Because ultimately, when you look at the shared pains in construction, it's usually because of a communication breakdown.
Yeah. And I think everyone can agree that that is the problem. But I think what I'm hearing you say the solution is that it's a service and a product, and that you need, like, in order to connect all these things together, like, you know, a lot of these e-build or Procore or other things, like, I think is Boomi one of the products you guys use, right? It's like, cause you're a service team on top of products like Boomi and others, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. And that's where we don't have a product necessarily ourselves. We are agnostic. I think that sets us apart from any of the resellers who sell you a solution and then, you know, you call them up again, you have a problem, can never get a hold of them again. We don't care what you buy. We care that it works for you, and really align ourselves as a tech partner in that space. And what that means is you get to own your data. We're not putting it onto our system. We're not selling you a proprietary solution. We are building a solution for you to own, manage, maintain. And we're just supporting and being your partner in that space. And so it creates a lot of fun. It allows us to roll up our sleeves, get our hands dirty with Trimble solutions, Procore solutions, Autodesk solutions, and more. And it starts to expose those process gaps that are kind of in design by construction, right? With design, bid, build, or even other delivery methods. We're always throwing a ball over the fence to some other company. And by creating good data pathways, we are eliminating double data entry. One of my jokes is I hated submittals so much. I made it my full-time job, just having to fat finger them into my system, the owner system, the GC system, was not what I got into design for. And then two, it really helps democratize the process. Like, you know, we do design to bid build because we want to get diversity and have other teams be able to work. Well, if you force them to use tools they're not familiar with, then they're not going to be working their best. And so we help in the world of technology enablement and letting people kind of solve the have your cake and eat it too of construction technology.
But I think what you're getting into is that nuance of the submittal process itself, like, is an intellectual property, right? It is a strategy. It's a skill set that I think, you know, like Avocado, I'm sure is like part of your repertoire, what you do. And then there are tools that help you deploy that, but the technology doesn't just solve the problem. It's the strategy that you do with the technology, like Boomi or other, you know, tools that can connect together, right?
Correct. Yeah. Like, I think we got spoiled with our phones. We download an app, it works right away. When you buy these massive technology solutions, it's not as simple as that. We made the joke, I think, at Western Winter. It was like, if you're going to buy a yacht, you're still going to need a crew. You could still be captain and you're still going to need help. And I think that's one of the pictures that teams need to understand, is that this technology, you're rolling it out so that all of your construction teams, no matter where they are, your building teams, your design teams, no matter where they are, no matter what they're using, have to communicate into this owner's ecosystem. And by doing that, you're creating a lot of power in the data, but what you're doing is creating a lot of churn in the people. You know, the person who's a carpenter does not have desire to go pop open their laptop and do data entry. They got into carpentry because they wanted to build things with their hands. And so there's so much that can be done today with either reality capture, with the information solutions that we have, to allow us to communicate that data and then free up the time of the people who want to create value in their own unique ways, whether it be building and being hands-on, to do it the way they're familiar with.
I love this. So we're teed up here, and I got to jump in here and say we're recording this podcast March 13th of 2025, the same day that we released a podcast, AOC episode 367, titled Material Fueled Conversations About the AEC Summit. And I'm going to call myself out here that the idea of this perfect thing of how do we speak the same language and have the right people listening is not ever going to be the case. And here's a couple stories to tee this up. Nick, I love your comment on the lead-in when you talk about, we don't care what you buy. We want to make what you have work, and so you can own your data. Well, if you don't hit record, you're not going to capture the data. So when this podcast goes live, we got to do a pre-interview to the pre-interview because I forgot to hit record after I've done 350 of these podcasts. But I can tell you, when I hit record on the podcast that got released today, Devin was going on and we were joking, and I was actually texting Nathan of, what does this acronym stand for? Nathan, you know what I'm talking about?
Let me get my phone.
The podcast Charlie Dunn was talking about Devin and his acronyms of three letter, four letter, this, that. And the reality is I'm trying to be as real as I can be with everybody listening to this podcast. When Charlie just said, what we're really talking about here is if you want to be part of the 40% waste, you should come to the summit, because you don't be able to just listen to a podcast and move on and plug avocado into your business. So I asked the question to myself and every day, how do I speak the right language where people are listening through this podcast, right? And so on the pre-interview to the pre-interview, Nick, this has been really fun getting to know how you're disseminating this stuff of the acronyms of what we call something. You talked about the Rosetta Stone of like how languages come together. And I think that's a very important time right now, Nathan, of like these threads of show up and throw up versus getting into the circle of trust that we try to do with the AEC Integration Summit and turn these shared pains into shared gains. Because if you don't show up to the table, as many other podcasts leading in and out of the summit, you're not going to turn these shared pains into shared gains. Tell me about when you were saying relatable through speaking the same language in the Rosetta Stone of the pre-interview to the pre-interview.
Yeah, so this is it's a fun topic because it really, to me, breaks into the true kind of diachromatic pain of like trying to reach standards as well as trying to enable innovation. And when you over-standardize something, then nobody's flexible, nobody can adapt, nobody can adjust because they have to follow the rules. And so to a degree, too much of that is bad. It's great, helps accelerate things. There's so many values of standardization, but you lose your flexibility. Opposite hand, too much flexibility. Everybody speaks in different languages. Nobody knows what the heck they're doing. Whole lot of churn, but it maximizes the creativity. And so finding balance between these two things becomes really hard. And what's interesting, and I'm not an overly religious person, but I really like this story. It's about the Tower of Babel. And the short story is humanity was trying to build a tower to heaven. God found out. He said no and made us speak all different languages. And now we can't build. And it's so funny because it actually really feels like the pain in going to that like Rosetta Stone gap that we have. Contractors speak a certain way. Designers speak a certain way. Owners have their own unique business needs and have to deal with the necessary evil of building. And how do we all start to understand each other while understanding that being able to speak different languages still adds value to that chain going against those two kind of, if we all spoke the same language, we'd all think the same and we'd probably not have that much diversity. If we don't speak the same language, we get creative, we have some pain, but at least we do some cool things. And so through avocado, our goal is to really enable connectivity between all of those systems and all of those languages so that you can speak the way that you understand best. And then the other person can understand you the way that they understand best through either an integration between your system and their system so that they're getting what they need and you're getting what you need out of it. Or having a little bit of a workshop and helping both of those teams communicate and find that process improvement. And so we do a lot of coaching. We do a lot of working with teams and understanding business processes so that we can then leverage technology through the people and through the processes to get the innovation that we're aiming to see on the programs that we support.
Nathan, Nick keeps talking about people. I thought AI was going to fix all that.
Well, I mean, communication and language, right? I mean, that is what this is all about. And I think that's, well, and I think where this is supposed to fix all this people stuff is where the data is broken. I think, let me take a step back because I think we're all early adopters or digital natives or whatever you want to call it, is those that are on the early frontier of technology where we know that this stuff hasn't worked until all of a sudden it did work, that it had to fail and fail and fail and learn and learn and learn. And then all of a sudden one day it's like, holy crap, this stuff works really well. And all the people that didn't use it through all of those different early stages are like, wow, this is magic. This is amazing. Like, I need this to do this for my industry. But yet nobody in our industry has done all that grungy, dirty, mapping and all that kind of connectivity that is needed to really create that Rosetta Stone. In my opinion, And so that I think is why we end up with, so, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's what you call AI vomit, or maybe, you know, there's other things that you call that. But I feel like that to me is the mess that AI has gotten us into, is the fact that we're not actually ready for it, even though it's ready for us. But I don't know, Nick, what do you think?
AI vomit. So I think when I first initially said AI vomit, what I was meaning is we're seeing right now what looks like kind of a dot-com bubble. Everybody can make a website. Everyone can make a GPT. Everyone can make an app. You hear the words AI wrapper out there, and it's quite literally someone has used something like OpenAI, ChatGPT, created an AI tool, and then threw that on the market. I feel like we're in the world where there is going to be a ton of that, a new one every day. In fact, they're super useful. But the problem for those folks who are creating AI wrappers is they're super easy to make. And so I think as AI starts to get to know us as individuals a little bit better and can tailor the technology to what we're looking for, we're going to start to find point solutions that are perfect for ourselves versus having the, you know, the point solution that's perfect for a very specific use niche case. And now we're going to get an entire different kind of fragmentation problem of millions of micro solutions that don't connect together. And that's where I think then an AI platform is going to start to appear, where now you can have your AI agent actually work across multiple different AI tools and create a sense of connectiveness across of those things. So right now we're in that, you know, fast, messy, everybody is playing, everybody's coming up with cool new ways of doing things. I only imagine 10% of them are going to stick around, and the other 90%, you know, was going to be a great learning lesson. And I think that's something important to keep with you, is like that learning lesson probably will pay the way to something even newer and even better. But it's a challenging market out there right now for AI.
Totally agree. And then, but then going into more nuances around the table of when you say residential, are you working with production builders, or are you a production builder? Are you working with custom, you know, architects who are only doing custom luxury homes, or are you working with a supply channel that only does that? And those threads are, we're in the sophomore slump of that stuff that I truly believe computational design through AI tools are going to help break through the ceiling. So when we're sitting around the table at the summit, not at a conference, just listening to a marketing team tell us what this next deliverable is, these are the powerful tools that we're going to be able to drive those engines in and out of those conversations.
Yeah. And this is, I think, a part of interesting aspect of niching down and finding your right fit, as if you're a technology organization, find your right fit. I think the lesson I learned at the previous startup was boiling the ocean is the best way to burn out your resources, try to solve too many problems, do all of them okay. And like, there's no room for okay anymore in technology. And so there's a really great book that I've read. It's called The Business of Expertise. And it talks a lot about trying to find your sweet spot as a business. What's crazy is the sweet spot will tend to continue to evolve as you go. And then it's also going to fight with the risk of putting all your eggs into one basket and being overly niched, which is something that, you know, Avocado, we actually felt back when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed. A lot of our data center clients sucked in their gut. Money disappeared. We had a lot of eggs in that basket, and we had to scramble like hell to diversify. And thankfully we did, because there's a deep need for integration solutions and better use of technology. So we said, okay, well, who's like data centers? Healthcare, higher ed, they have campuses that they're managing. Transportation, infrastructure, those sectors have a ton of assets that they're managing that are critical to have an uptime. And so we grew into those spaces. We were doing work in those spaces already, but we much more intentionally leaned in that direction. And now, flash forward to today, AI boom pops off, and now I'm all gung-ho going back into data center land, trying to figure out how to help them build faster. Because the data center of tomorrow, like, it is not the data center of today. We were working in the worlds of megawatts. Now everyone's talking about gigawatts. We see between OpenAI and Apple alone is $1 trillion of planned spending in this space. And so how do we accelerate all of that? And how do we then accelerate power and water, which are the people who are going to even make those things possible, regardless of whether or not we build? And so there's these really fun kind of industry flux things, and they're not fun to everyone. I understand there's industry challenges that come with that. But there's something always happening. There's something exciting. And if you can find out how your skills translate to creating value in those spaces, you're going to find great ways to diversify your niche and still be within it at the same time.
Well, and what you're doing can be niche, but who you're doing it for is strategically broad, right? It's figuring out where can you apply that unique talent that you have across different verticals that are going to survive different, you know, larger market waves and things like you just described.
Yeah, and he gave the crystal ball from 10 years ago, and now we're here today, of how many balls do you keep in the air to actually continue to grow your business? Because either you're growing or you're dying, and we have to break through the ceiling of construction. Is really the main grade is how profitable you were, because you're only as good as your last project. And we're trying to break down those barriers when it comes to utilizing these tools for operational excellence and orchestrating the build model to be done differently. And that's what we're all trying to figure out, that the people like us that have been doing the great game of business for a few generations and want to break through the ceiling, it's all there. So that's why I've asked this question for 350 plus podcasts, Nick, that I continue, that I'm going to ask for the next 350, because you learn by doing. And that's the part that we all have to figure out when, Nick, you're talking about of the riches in the niches, but you can't niche in too much, but you can't go everywhere, right? And that's this hard part. So I'm super curious of the pre-interview to the pre-interview to the bad recording to the this to the that, of all the time of getting us here, where we're now just months away from meeting up in person to go have as much fun as possible. And at the end of the day, the call to action is get involved and be a seat at the table to help actually have these crystal balls come to life. So Nick, what is your crystal ball when it comes to the future with technology and construction?
You know, I was joking with my marketing team. We said, you know, once AI started happening and I started seeing people have search behaviors through AI and moving away from using a Google search and going to a GPT search, is that I was like, oh man, I guarantee 3 months we're going to start seeing things like AI SEO come out, and like, how do you optimize AI to recommend your business over others? And HubSpot came out, I think, 2 weeks ago on exactly that topic. And so my crystal ball is really to take it, or really my recommendation, take that step back and look at how the fabric that we exist in within our industries can change. And people have asked me, it's like, well, where do I start with AI? Literally ask AI that question. Every task that I do usually ends up with me bouncing it off of my AI assistant. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not. When it's not, I learn why it's not. When it is, I learn why it is. And then you iterate. It's just like learning in any other space. And so I think, you know, there's so much room to embrace the opportunities. A challenge generally means that there's money to be made as soon as you figure out how to do it. And what I'd love to see with AI kind of starting to democratize the ability to really be analytical at a schedule and find those patterns and do some analytics, that if you're not deep into SQL, I'm not, you still can actually then query information now with AI and skip that need of being data literate to the caliber that you needed to be 5 years ago. And so trust your tools, be, you know, scrutinous, don't, you know, trust but verify kind of thing. But there's so much room for people to find new value. And so, long answer to say, crystal ball for the future of technology is people are going to find ways to create new solutions. I see us moving to prefab and modular. Why? There's not enough workforce, and we can't just invent people. And so we have to build differently. We have to design differently. We have to think about what it means to pull together a kit of parts, assemble them on site, and hit it with scale and efficiency, because that gives us certainty so that the capital people, the people with the money who make all of these things go, know that they can put trust in our organizations to deliver on those things. And so figure out where you're creating value. Contractors, it's not because you built the building, it's how you've built the building that matters. How is so much more important than why or what we do in today's day and age. And that's where I think folks should focus.
It's so inspiring. It makes me so excited, Nathan, to come to your summit when I get frustrated of a partner I've been working with for 12 years. 2 weeks ago, I'm at a meeting at the Builder Show, and they say, you know what, Devin, why do you care so much about this modular thing? And I've been trying to get them involved in all the stuff, and they said, yeah, we just had to make a tough decision that, you know, we were putting a lot of resources to that and it just wasn't getting anything out of that. So we just eliminated all those people and that whole division is gone. And we had to corporately take the resources and move them over here. That was so disheartening for me to hear, because I've invested a generation of trying to make that partner align. And what I've really thought hard, and it's been really tough for me, Nathan, because they help pay my livelihood. And I have to look at it and just say, okay, they're just too jaded right now because they're looking at the 2%. And then I have to call myself out and say, no, maybe they're right.
Well, stop. I'm jumping in. I know this is your podcast, but I'm jumping in. I'm co-host. You need to ask why. There is a legitimate reason. And again, they're jaded, maybe it is, they're whatever, but they had a bad experience. It didn't pan out. Like, they put money into it. So there is that's what fuels me, is that I don't get disheartened as long as we're willing to go through that last step of asking why did we get to that place. So that the next person that does want to jump in, because someone else will want to jump in. There are all these reasons to go modular, and someone will throw money in again, but we want to make sure they don't have the same experience that the last person did. And so if we don't spend our time doing that root cause analysis, which is what the summit is all about, which, footnote, is weeks away, not months away. don't scare me. This we're at.
Well, then that, you know, days are long and the years are short. And why I shared that story is because now they're helping me introduce up and downstream partners and saying, you only have so many bandwidth to focus on so many things at different moments in time, right? And so you have to figure out how those threads come together, because I had to jump in there. And Nick, I thank you for seeing that from a perspective of, you know, the whole 2% paradigm shift of trying to figure out when this thing is just going to get upended. Because that's what I keep looking at this thing to make that happen.
Yeah, I think when these people are bringing these reservations, and it's like, for you as the practitioner in the space, it's like, oh my God, you're missing the ball. You're worried about this thing. It's one thing that's really helped me, and it's been super humbling, is making the recognition that when people are bringing negative energy, if you will, to a space, it's because they're speaking from a fear or an anxiety that they have that has not yet been spoken to. And so the reason people are interested in modular and prefab is because they're worried about the workforce. And so you don't need to do prefab and modular if you can speak to the problem behind the problem, which is the workforce concerns. There's aspects too of, like, I don't want to be the guy, you know, be coming from the architecture industry that says prefab modular is the way to go, because there is an aspect of beauty that's super important in what we design. But it's finding where to put experience and what experience totally even means for different users. Experience in a kitchen is well planned, not beautiful. Experience in a restaurant, atmospheric. And I think that's two uses within one building envelope, just to articulate how nuanced that can be with all of our projects.
Yeah, I have to bring up the book I just finished from going to a window manufacturer, and the book was called Unreasonable Hospitality. And it was about the restaurant of being invited to be the top 50 and like going unreasonable about like feeding the meter so they could really have that one of a kind experience. And so like creating these one-of-a-kind experiences, knowing we have to build smarter and differently, is putting those threads together, right? And that's what we're trying to do, to where, Nathan, you don't want to just show up and throw up. Like, I brought a lot of experience of modular to the summit when I was in the Where's My Fab thread last year. But the guidance we all have to get each other is like, give credit to Nathan when he says, hold on, let me chime in here as your co-host and look at this from a different perspective. Because you don't know what you don't know, and boy, we can be jaded by what we think we know when we speak up too much instead of just spewing, instead of stopping and listening.
And what I heard Nick say, to hopefully summarize in a few words, is that the root cause is, I guess, the root cause really around misaligned objectives that, like, at the end of the day, you know, that we don't actually agree on why we're all here and what we're here to do is part one. But I think what you described and I wrote down here is that we're posturing around our unspoken fears. That there's all these, like, ooh, you know, fears, ooh, that we all have. As architects, we have fears. As trades, we have fears. There's all these different fears that we kind of talk about within our circles, but we don't talk about outside of it because that's our safe space, right? And so, like, how do we talk about these unspoken fears in a way that actually resolves them?
And Nathan, that's why the title was, it started as Material Feud, and it ended up being Material Fueled, F-U-E-L-E-D. And that was credit to Charlie Dunn of getting us to duke it out, but then fueling the fire here at the Fireside Chat, right? And bringing these threads together to say, it's actually really fueling us from these feuds to say, they're just looking right now at the next quarter of market share and mass consolidation and acquisition in the material worlds. That's going to really upend this stuff in a good way. You just have to be getting fueled by the fire instead of feuding through the fire.
Yeah, I tell my team it's called moving to the ball. My dad always taught me this in soccer. You know, if you want to win possession in sports, you need to go to the ball. The ball is not coming to you. If it's passed to you and someone else goes to the ball, they're going to beat you to it. And so there's all of these industry things that are happening right now. They're going to create concerns. But if you move to the opportunity and you maintain that flexibility, I think you're going to find yourself in some pretty good spots. And I'm so happy you recommended that book. Unreasonable Hospitality is like a next on my list. But if I may share, I think we're talking a little bit about just even the reactiveness. One of the most powerful articles, I'm going to put it in our chat if you want to share it with the listeners. It's called The Powers of 10 and it in the in time scales for user's experience. And what's really cool about the article is it digs into how our brain perceives information from a microsecond right up to 10 minutes. And what it does is really kind of starts to break down how, as people, we experience frustration and pain. A spinning wheel for 5 minutes, you've left the website. Those kinds of things, lacking feedback from the people that we work with, lacking good communication is hard. And then this is where things like the summit become so valuable is in construction. We're not great at being vulnerable. I think maybe it's partly because we are a male dominated industry and feelings are not a strong suit of ours. But being vulnerable, and the other half being the lawyers who don't want us to admit we did something wrong. But that vulnerability is the secret to the sauce. If we can say this went wrong because we didn't have a clearly defined process around who needed to review this submittal, or we didn't have the clearly defined methodology for our design review, so we ended up with day two changes because one of the facility guys was never engaged. These are easily avoidable problems, and why they're so painful to us later after the fact is like, oh man, it was just one more person being in the room that would have stopped this from happening. We avoid being vulnerable when really we should be more often. And what I learned when I got into the sales world is always be asking, how is this deal going to fall apart? And if teams could be coming to projects just saying, hey, here are our fears, here are our anxieties, let's address them all, I bet it'd be much smoother seas.
So, Nathan, you got to go close on your new house. Congratulations. The one thing we're going to close this thing out with is call to action. Make sure you go check out Wired to Build after you listen to The Art of Construction and vice versa. We'll put all the links to the show notes. And take a little time to research and understand what this AEC Integration Summit is, because there's the title of the book that we're talking about here, but then there's the conversation in the undertows. And my one thing, Nick says, thank you for Unreasonable Hospitality. The headline, the 2%, the 3%, whatever you want to say, very few people are actually going to go read the book. But the undertow of the cover of the book says, the remarkable power of giving people more than they expect. That's what I, as a go-giver, that's been my passion, why I keep doing this podcast and why Nathan keeps doing this summit. But it's really coming to where the power of these summits is the conversation before and after the conversation. In the book I'm at right now, the title of the chapter I'm finishing is titled, Being Right is Irrelevant. So that's my one thing, is we're all irrelevant until you are. What's your one thing, Nick? And then Nathan, close us out. Why they should all come join us and be part of the AEC Integration Summit.
So I'm gonna build on what you just said. The being right is almost irrelevant. You can be the best at anything, and that's not the only factor that's going to contribute to your success. And building off of the fears and anxieties thing, if you're doing something brave and you're doing something creative and different, you're going to find that the people who support you are not going to support you the way that you think they would. They're going to express their own fears. They're not going to want you to do it. I remember leaving architecture to go into tech, and my mom's like, you just spent 5 years in school and 3 years getting your license and all of these other things, and now you're going to cast it aside. Why? That didn't feel like support at the time. Now, I realize she's speaking to free from love. She wants me to be successful. She wants me to have the career that I set out to have. And so she's being supportive in her own way. We need people to become more brave and go out onto those unknown ledges and have the confidence that they know what they're doing so that they can take those big risks and make those big impacts. These roads are lonely at times, but then you find communities like this where there's a whole bunch of more nerds who care about this just as deeply as you do, and that's where the rubber hits the road.
Absolutely. And final plug, because I can't help it, you got to go back if you didn't listen to Charlie Dunn in the last episode here, I believe before this one, because he talks about this idea that if you're not making things easier first, you can't make them better. If you can't make them better, you can't make them faster. If you can't make them faster, you can't make them cheaper. And as you know, doing my own home renovation addition stuff and just so many things in my life, I feel like I look at the world the opposite, where I want to be cheaper first and then find faster ways to do it and then be better and then, you know, finally make it easier and end up making it harder on myself because I'm trying to just make things cheaper. And there is so much just to this you know, lean, agile design thinking mindset that is, I think, is what a lot of the folks share or kind of learning to share, and what you experience with the summit. And certainly what I've learned a lot from Charlie is it's all about mindset and all about, you know, what are the priorities, what's driving what you do, and are you in alignment and speaking that same language and not hiding those unspoken fears, because they fester, and as humans, we're just so, we notice them, we, you know, can't not notice them. And so the more you bring them out and talk about them, the better we'll be. So come to Austin and be in a safe space to talk about all those fun unspoken fears.